Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about frontier analysis, how I've used it in research, and how many years later I'm using it for rehabilitation. Now, frontier analysis is sort of groups of maths, which some are very powerful but really rarely used, and still nonetheless well established and known. Frontier analysis is an area of maths which is solid mathematically but it's unknown. So an equivalent type of maths would be simplex algebra. Simplex algebra is where you have a series of equation statements about a parameter, and each time you draw it, you sort of cut out a region of the graph, which is unlikely an area that the solution has to exist somewhere on the graph, and the information you have says, well, it's 30% of people died, but I don't know what the fraction is there, so you know that certain amounts of information. It's sort of like it's not fuzzy logic, but it's actually extracting the information from it when the information is sort of qualitative, not exact. Now, I haven't described it very well, and I should actually talk about simplex algebra. The beauty of simplex algebra is that it's results in a matrix formation. And matrices interest me in a number of ways, in that they deal with the interaction of several parameters all at once. So if I've got x, y, z, that forms a vector, and it sort of, I describe the relationships between x, y, and z. So in quantum mechanics, they're all quite fixed. So an example of matrix algebra is for when you get spin or multi-dimensional stuff. XYZ, XYZT is one example. So it is interesting in that matrix algebra itself is something which you can, I suppose you get a resolved answer from. People are very interested in the sort of the final vector you go. So a vector, which is a rank, so you've got a lower rank tensor and it multiplies to a higher rank tensor and leads to a similar rank tensor. So it's like a 1x3 matrix times a 3x3 will give you a 1x3 matrix, and then you can do the cross product of one by one by one by three can give you a 3x3. Depends how you describe it. You've got determinants of matrices. All this is very interesting in that there's some real world problems where you can actually make a controlled judgment. Now, for me, it's very interesting in that people don't comprehend what it means that they don't understand maths. They believe that best effort, they've got to believe something on the next best effort way of doing things. So it's a little bit complicated. It's sort of a big gap between so people who don't have maths and will never understand maths and have never gone to understand it believe that in sort of spirituality, value, look and feel of whether something's right or wrong, and they sort of give them permission, they give themselves permission not to have maths, which is sort of an interesting aspect of it. So that's simplex algebra. Now, what I'm talking about is frontier analysis. Now, I should just on the side say that I'm just driving down to have my car, the headlights gone in the car, and you can drive down to a auto part shop on a weekend and get it fixed. It's pretty amazing to see that happen. That's what I'm doing. But I'm talking about frontier analysis. Now, if I have a graph of something in us, I think in this case is the in the case that I was looking at, it was the expansion of a fibre core versus the width of the fibre. So as you headed up the fibre, this is a glass fibre, 125 micron fibre, a bit over a tenth of a millimetre across. As you headed it up, in oxygenated gas, some of the silicon dioxide would oxidise and form a sort of a sand gas. It would burn away and could burn these fibres down. Now, what used to happen is that you'd set up the equipment and you'd get one with a very low erosion, or low, it didn't really take, or there'd be another one, the same thing, and it would erode, burn a lot, and have a very large mode field diameter. And if you can imagine, this formed a line which went from high left to low down. And as you just run your equipment, you'd get a series of dots which would form a line. Then you could change the oxygen content of your flame, or change some sort of parameter of it, and you'd get a different line. And this is that you're measuring two things that you're doing, possibly, you know, multiple things at once. It interacts in a complex way and produces basically a random filling out of a line which forms a frontier. This aspect is something that people are really schooled in not being able to cope with. People are schooled with, I have one variable, like the amount of suitcases I put in the car, and then, oh my God, that's a car, it's going far too fast. How far, oh my God, it's just sheer scary to see people at speed. Okay, so I'm saying that as I'm pulling up to this place. So what happens is that people normally expect the sort of area of math, the tiny, tiny area of maths, and so you've got no maths whatsoever, then you've got a very small area of maths, and that's where I control everything and vary one and then see it. It's this it's this sort of fiction. It's sort of like the one. So if you imagine all your variables up and the interaction has got a diagonalizable array, in that circumstances, if you controlled everything and vary it, you'd be able to pick the relationship between it. And in essence, this is a very high expense. So if you controlling everything, right, takes a lot of energy, and it's so much so that you're investing more and getting less data out. And so you can invest less, get more data out, and you don't get a precise answer, you get a frontier. And you can then see that if I then vary a parameter, my frontier moves out or in, just to go in. And this is something called frontier analysis. And I'll just come in here to this place and see how it all pans out. It's an amazing sequence, sort of an incredibly isolating sequence that people do not live their lives at all mathematically. So I'm just going to have a check here. What are you doing, you bastard? Okay. it's coming around, trying to get in here. Yeah, so this is sort of like the loneliness of mathematics, I think I could say, in that majority of people who have got no mathematics whatsoever rely on magic or spirituality to do things. Then, if you do understand mathematics, you have an obligation, a duty of care given by knowledge. So there's a sort of, you know, this fundamental thing was a child is not legally responsible. They're given reduced rights and reduced responsibility. Now, I'm just going to come in here. It says no standing in time, so I'm just going to pop in here. I'll be with you in a moment. But this frontier analysis, so just let's summarise it again. And I'm doing lots and lots of podcasts, so I'll have to get back in. And my podcasting has been sort of screwed up a little bit as I'm using my podcasting things for a few other things going forward. I'll come back and hopefully continue talking with you. Okay, continuing this podcast, I've just come out of super cheapo auto, had a rather expensive headlight replaced, but look, the person who did it is a Nobel Prize winning mechanic. He was just, I'm just in awe of him, just absolutely doing it. Now, in his, I'm sure there are things that he knows in his world, like he's in a mechanic view world and I'm sort of at a base level. A lot of people are base level of mathematics. They don't know anything about it. They don't understand that an understanding of probability is an essential adjunct to ethics. And then the ability to solve mathematical problems is the ability to solve life's problems. And there's simplex algebra, and simplex algebra truly is a life-saving mathematics. It's fantastic to have. I couldn't go past simplex algebra as just such a fantastic thing to have. Then there's frontier analysis. And frontier analysis was able to allow me to optimize this robotic equipment, which was actually heating up or curing optical fibers as best as I could, to see different masses. So overnight it would, you set it to something, overnight it would produce 30 points or variation. So whatever it was varying, but in that variability, you sort of accounted for the variability. Now, the frontier analysis is very similar to looking at whether the frontier is flat or bowed or things like that. If it's bowed, it's got a huge importance to it. Now, what that means is that you don't tend to parcel off things. I'm using frontier analysis in my rehab, remarkably, and that I am both exerting myself on a treadmill and doing cognitive exercises. Now, there is a bit of a frontier in that as you exert yourself, your cognitive performance drops down. And so this produces a general variation, or there's a general variation of, say, 1 or 2% variation. We're not actually seeing that at this point in time here. I'm just going to have to stop here while I do this next. Okay, back again, discussing frontier analysis. So let's really try and put it down to the fact. Say the performance I have, you've got various parameters, the speed and incline I'm working out to heart rate, and put that as a quality factor of the workout, and then when I first started, I could get up to 3.6, and now I'm up to 5. kilometres an hour. There's sort of variations of angle which I can do and heart rate I can go at. And just say you can put a quality factor on that, a limit, I can do it. There's another factor, say the time that you're at it. And another factor, your actual percentage score. So from zero, if you say 1%, there's 99 people better than you in a cohort of 100. If you get 100%, I suppose, as far as I can understand, you're right at the top. It sort of doesn't quite make sense to me in terms of normal distribution. It seems an odd way of reporting things. But you've got a percent, and you've got these things, and you could say that if I really push myself, my cognitive stuff will go down. Or if I don't, the cognitive stuff will go up. And so you could imagine that there's some sort of line, if you were to pull this out, if I vary the rate at which I go at. And then, say further, if I do training in the morning after a sleep or at the end of a day, I get a different rate. So in that three-dimensional space, that's a frontier surface, and what one would want to do is for that information, so each point produces a spot on the surface, and that surface can with time migrate out, hopefully upwards and outwards, so that I can actually work longer. Now this is probably yet another factor, the length of time that I can actually do. So I started off only being able to do 20 minutes, now I can do 2 hours. So there's obviously some improvement, yet probably only a really marginal improvement. Say, so it's from 54% fairly quickly up to 64%, then 69% up to 71%, down to 69%, up to 71%, now at 74%. So that improvement is there, but that 74% now is for 2 hours work. Now so rather than looking at a single figure, which people tend to do, the measurements of how much salary you go, you look at a whole series of parameters to work out your frontier. And what often happens is that people, evidently so, only think of doing one thing at a time. Now there's a marketing reason for that. This is because people, your product, you sell the same product into many, many different markets. Now the allied product, now there's certain situations where you need an allied product, let's say a theatre and a dinner and a transport, where the narrative goes together. That's obviously a linear sequence in your life. You want to do this and that. But the number of people who think of doing two things at the same time, and that's what you really have to do for cognitive development, you get a far greater hit if you get both left and right side of the brain working, or the brain's actually going off doing something like jogging or breathing or or whatever. I don't think it's at all optimized. In fact, far from it. It would speak to me that sorry for this. It would be very interesting to actually get some. Oh, Godfather! I hate people speeding. Oh, makes me sick. but they obviously have a high-speed car that they can operate. That's a Mercedes C-Class or something like that. Something that's got heaps of power under the bonnet. Hopefully they pay a premium at the petrol bars for it. And that might be thing. It's speed and petrol consumption, and those two things form an envelope. And people just really can't people are really one data point at a time rather than a cluster, a strategy, a combined strategy, and they're not off doing it. Now, it's really ideally what one would want to do is you can imagine these two parameters coming together forming a line. Now, ideally, the line will either migrate up or bow down. And in that sense, the actual variation of data gives you more information about the frontier that you're looking at. Like you're getting a sort of free variation, you know, free variation. So I might get push myself up into 90%, and then my intelligence quota drops down to 71%. Perhaps that hasn't happened so far, and the sort of the knowledge of adding the two together. Now it's really interesting that there is people. You can sort of see how people doing something a little bit unusual is sort of like, this is out of the box. 0% of the people do it. People are really good mathematically when it comes to working out basic things. Do I get food and will I fit in? They can judge really, really quickly. Their natural mathematical ability is really high. So they can judge that doing something unusual means that I won't fit in. So you do something which very few other people do, they decide that this is going to suffer a whole lot more cognitive barriers to doing it. And those people get a result of fitting in. They don't do anything unusual. And like it would be unusual to see another person do this cognitive training. At the moment, there's statistics, a sample of one, and you can easily discount that. However, there is some basic logic to it, and overall, that's really where mathematics leads you. Like if you're like if you've got no mathematics, the only gut feeling you have to do is you have to do everything by gut feeling, by feel. And gut feeling tells you to conform. So there is this thing that if you do have a lot of mathematics, you then have a range of solutions open to you which are not open to your average punter. And therefore they tend to... there is a frontier of your mathematical ability and options that you have. So you've got greater mathematical ability, you've got greater options. And people sort of operate in a way that someone with a lack of mathematical ability fits in. They are quintessentially the laugh of the town. They're the spirit of the bar. They're just something which absolutely holds the whole place together. So this is your dumb person who doesn't know anything but has got some good wisdom to shove down your throat. And they can't argue with them because they're not mathematical. Now, it's just that the locus of belief is there. And so it's sort of put me off on my own mathematical island. I often think it's a little bit like being a permanent castaway. And rather than being finally rescued and grabbing a cigarette lighter and switching on and off and just going, my God, that is so easy. It's more Wilson, the volleyball with the hair growing on it, is you have just got so much personality. Wilson is so worthwhile. I'm sort of my castaway version of castaway. I don't get rescued. And it continues, and it seems that you have to do more and more maths. A cycle of stop the mathematics, I've got to get off.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.